going to officially get started. This is the City of South Jordan Combined City Council and Planning Commission meeting, study meeting. We welcome all of you here. Today is Tuesday, March 7th, 2023. My name is Dawn Ramsey. I have the privilege of serving as Mayor of the City of South Jordan, and I am joined here by our outstanding City Council and Planning Commission. We have a couple people joining us remotely, so we welcome you. Councilmember Harris is remote. We've got Commissioner Catwell joining us remotely. We're going to excuse Gary Watcott, our city manager today, who is doing some work for the city and unable to be here with us right now. But we welcome all of our administrative staff who are here and the public. Thank you to members of the public who are here in person and online, joining us online. We've got some residents joining us that way, too. We're going to open this meeting tonight with an invocation, which I will offer. Our Father in heaven, as we come before thee, we are truly grateful to be here in these seats tonight as stewards of the City of South Jordan. We're grateful for the process that allows each of us an opportunity to serve. All those that are interested have the opportunity to step forward and offer to represent the residents of this great city if they want us to. We're grateful for this system and for the blessing it is for us to have this period of time where it's our turn. We're grateful for all of those who live in the City of South Jordan, those who serve and work to help their neighbors and make this community the wonderful place that it is. We're grateful for the professional staff who are such experts in their field, who work very hard to help support us and our residents and keep things running so smoothly and so fiscally sound in this city. We appreciate having members of the Planning Commission here with us tonight and appreciate their service, their volunteer service to this community and all that they do. And ask you to please send thy spirit to be with us this evening. Please bless us that we can have good discussion, that we can make wise choices, and that we can come together to help move the good work of this incredibly fast-growing city forward. We pray that we can be wise and that we can have our hearts and minds open to ideas that will come to us from the public tonight or any of those that may speak. And again, thank thee for the blessing that it is to be in these seats. We pray for thy spirit to be here with us and ask thee to bless all of our staff who are out protecting our city and working hard to maintain the safety that we appreciate so much. Please bless them with safety and protection with thy family. We thank thee for this food and ask thee to please bless it, to help our bodies have the energy and strength we need to accomplish the work ahead of us this evening. And a special thank you to Robin Shelton for going above and beyond to help bless and take care of us tonight. Again, we thank thee and dedicate ourselves to thee and to the work that we have the opportunity to do in representing and doing the best we can to help take care of the residents of South Jordan City. And we say these things gratefully in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thanks, Mayor.
Right. We have our coordination time. Anybody have any questions about our regular? Let's just do our coordination. Anybody have anything specific you'd like to bring up?
I do have one little item there.
Please.
I had a resident approach me this morning, and she said that she saw that we are already, as far as the Summerfest, the chalk art, she said that she saw that it's 10 a.m. judging, and I don't know if you all recall, but last year I lobbied to push that back. There you are. Janelle, sorry. So we had early judging last time, and I, at my request, we pushed it back. She just brought it to my attention today, and I said, I'll go in and talk to him again really early now. Her point is that the chalk artists, many of them can't do chalk art on Friday, and so they start Saturday morning, and when judging is at 10 a.m., it doesn't give them sufficient time. So we're losing talent because they won't do it with that little of time.
I have that feedback in my notes from last year, and you're going to need arts coordinator to make sure that works there, so we'll make sure if that's up right now, we'll get it adjusted.
Perfect. Thank you. I think it was like 1 p.m. or 2 p.m.
Yeah, it was early afternoon.
Yeah. She just said, I know people that won't do it unless we give them ample time. So I thank you. Perfect. So you'll just switch it. Thank you. That's it. That was easy. Thanks.
Thank you. I had not seen that judging was at 10 a.m. already. That is way ahead of the curve.
Well, wow. She's, yeah, these guys are fast. Good for you.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. Anybody else have anything specific you want to coordinate on, bring up? No? Mr. Harris, anything?
Not today.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. The only things that I have for us to coordinate on are just kind of some follow-up items to the end of the legislative session. I want to say thank you to everyone who engaged, and when we send out a request for everyone to activate, everyone did, and we appreciate that, and it was beneficial. It really was beneficial. I think all in all, we fared pretty well this session. I think cities fared better than we thought we would. I had a good post-session visit with Cameron today, and we both felt like that. After being at the UEOC meetings from the very beginning and knowing the direction that several things were headed and the intention that a lot of folks had to take bills in certain directions, I feel like a lot of good work has been done collectively to help help us with outcomes that we can live with and better have a better or a less bad impact. So thank you to all of you for that. I think a little bit later we're going to get a little more. We'll have Ryan help. We'll do a little postmortem, a little bit roundup of the legislative session and where some of those things ended, because it was things like the funding for the shared administrator for all of the rural communities in Utah didn't come through until the last hour of the session, but they did. It did. It made it into part of the budget, and it wasn't. It took a lot of work the last couple days to make sure that got put back into the budget, but it was, and it passed. Why does that matter to us? It actually does matter. It matters. We're very blessed to have the professional staff that we have, and the strong majority of communities across the state do not have anyone even close to what we have as far as staff. A lot of them have no staff, just one clerk, you know. And so we did a lot of lifting on that. We'll talk about HB 260, where that ended up and how it ended up. And it ended up changed in the very end it's morphed 100 times, but there were some changes there. So we'll do a little bit of a roundup later on tonight, but just wanted to thank you all for your engagement in that process. Thank you to everybody who participated, who attended LPC meetings, who asked questions, and who contacted our representatives. I will be sending a note of thanks to our representatives for working hard and representing us this session and collaborating with us. And just wanted to make sure you are aware that things for the most part went okay, and we'll give more specifics, but thank you.
So two things. One, do you want to go through some of those tonight, or do you want that in a future meeting?
I think when we just do staff reports, we can do a high
level.
I think we just
if you want me to prepare something.
Things that are the most, like, homeless services that we talked about, that we worked really hard on. An update on that, HB 260, where that ended up, just a couple of things, public safety maybe.
500. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. The things that
not a ton on public safety.
Maybe sent texts about, the things that we were maybe the most engaged in. There were a lot of things, but a couple of these high-level ones that have the greatest impact on us here in Salt Lake County and in South Jordan, I think so.
And then the second thing is, we really do need to thank, especially Senator Fillmore, for his work in the housing space, which he was new to, which he isn't inclined to work from a city perspective much, in which he listened and he worked through it, and he could have put a lot of things in there. He didn't let anybody hijack his bill, which may have happened to another one. And we ended up with a really good process. Some of that we can talk about as part of the Planning Commission discussion if we get into process of plats and public hearings and stuff like that. And that's all in 174. And then there are other representatives, or the representatives, Pulsifer, Cobb and Tusher, and then a little bit of Ivory. Ivory has like 20 homes.
And a little bit of Elison. But every one of them at one point or
they
another either texted
contact,
back
they all,
or called to reply to our requests. Yeah. Yeah.
They all engaged with us, and they were all great to work with. And I'm going to push harder this year and see if, like, once a month I can just get each one of you a lunch or a short meeting with one of them if you guys are amenable to it. And so don't be surprised if I just say, hey, can you just send that or group text you? Can one or two of you go to this time? If they say they can do it, then I'll just ask for volunteers.
Yeah. Because the way our part-time legislature works now, the interim starts now. Like, started yesterday.
Yeah, started yesterday.
You know, and it goes
on. Yeah, the weekend break.
You know? So,
except for the ones that I'm
so sorry.
Not your way.
And then they come back.
Spread out all over.
But the next UEOC meeting that will start to organize all new committees will be in May.
Yep.
To get started.
May?
Mm-hmm.
So, will you still be serving on that?
I have 2 more years as the league's representative on the Unified Economic Opportunity Commission. So,
that's
yeah.
great. Mayor, I'd be interested to know what the total is, what kind of what the damage is on the unfunded mandate.
I won't have that for you tonight.
Yeah,
you
I don't even know that we
maybe,
know the total quite
yeah,
yet.
Think we have that.
So like the retirement bill didn't go through, which would have been 300,000, but I don't have an exact number, but the gravel pit bill did go through, and that was
about $157,000.
Yeah.
Impact
yeah,
to South Jordan City, but I also want to talk to you, do this a little bit more about the veto request, which the draft of the letter will come to me tomorrow. So we're going to kind of be
working to ask
the governor to veto that and to use his convening powers to let's make it better. You know, gravel pits have been frustrating for cities for a long time, but changing the tax formula to take money, that's not
midstream.
Right. Well, it's the first time in 40 years that they've touched that tax distribution. Once you open that door, then why don't we change it for other things? Because changing that tax distribution, you have winners and losers, and you're picking them.
Yeah.
Like, for example, and it's not that they pushed it, but Draper wins in this. And then a whole bunch of other cities lose. So they get a huge increase because you go point of sale on the gravel and have all the sand and gravel or whatever it was in the middle. And the rest of us lose, you know, 100, 200,000. And you start to do that. Well, what is the one we're going to want to push behind the scenes that we're big winners on? And if you just change this one little thing, once you open that door, it all crumbles. And that's the essence of the veto request. It's not about gravel pits. It's about it's about process and messing with that tax without having a big discussion what you do to everybody.
The holistic conversation.
Exactly.
The veto request will be an uphill battle because it passed both houses by a good margin, both the House and the Senate by a good margin.
However, part of that's because they played a game. Though.
The process is what we're going to work on. So anyway, we'll have a little bit more discussion later, but that's what I want to coordinate on.
It went from being an agenda item on Monday to being passed on, was it Thursday afternoon or Friday morning?
Yeah.
Just all of a sudden it was passed.
I'm curious. I know we're going to kind of recap later tonight. There's also a recap tomorrow morning at the South Valley Chamber of Commerce. Are we also going to get a recap from like ULCT? Like here's
they do.
They always do Friday facts.
They well
okay.
Friday
yeah.
facts and stuff.
But
the big one is at the conference.
Yep.
The which
St. George.
St. George.
Oh,
right
clear not till then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's one of the highlights
for
me. I love that part.
Right.
If you check your Friday facts emails from the league.
Right, they're kind of weekly, but is there going to be a summary of the session kind of this Friday?
I would imagine.
Yeah,
okay.
I didn't see a Friday effect from last Friday. I'm sure there
probably because they were dead.
That their email list
like
has been terrible.
Do you feel like the South Valley Chamber thing tomorrow morning is going to be?
It's not even
part of
calendar.
It's a legislative. You
use it?
I RSVP'd.
I didn't RSVP for it. When I read it, they wanted elected officials,
oh, yeah.
So I didn't RSVP for it.
Sorry. Yeah, that's at 8 a.m. in the morning.
So
yeah.
If you get
yeah,
handouts
yeah.
or anything, if you can
it
just
it was
forward
an email.
Me a picture. No, I saw it, but they were specifically targeting elected officials, so I didn't
okay.
jump in the pool. And so if you forward me any handouts, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. I'll be there. Are you going to be there?
Oh, because President Adams and Speaker Wilson will be there. That will be valuable.
Well, that will be a good
one.
Okay. That's good.
And they'll probably have really delicious food.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
It'll be.
Okay.
Yeah.
That
was
good.
Yeah, we'll be there in the morning.
That's
pie. Sheldon's pie.
I wouldn't have remembered that was tomorrow. Tonight when I looked at tomorrow. So
you need to get out of here
so
before midnight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, thank you. If there's nothing else to coordinate, Mr. Harris?
Nothing else.
Okay.
Nope.
All right, thank you. All right, anybody have any questions about our regular agenda item, regular agenda for our meeting? Councilman Stewart is coming. He wants to be a more engaged member of the county council and his wards. He wants to make sure to engage and have good communication with us, and so we appreciate his willingness to come. He's going to take a few minutes and He asked for a time certain, which, as you know, is really hard to do. So outside of our regular agenda schedule, we put him right at the start to give him as close to a time certain as possible this time. But he'll be coming to visit with us, and I'm sure any questions that you have for him. Just for way of information, we will talk
about
this later as well. But HB 260, yeah, he probably might bring that up. So just so you know, the county council did vote on whether or not to support HB 260, and it was a vote of 6-3 in favor, as it had been drafted at the time, which was changed before it passed. It didn't mean that they voted that they were going to pass that, but that they were going to at least support the bill. But Sheldon Stewart and Dave Albert and Dee Theodore were the three that voted against it. So he might bring that up, and we'll have more discussion about where that actually ended up and what it could look like later. So just FYI. Just a presentation about signing our cooperation agreement with the Elections Division of the county, like we always have when we have an election. They run our elections for us. If you read through the information, you'll see that it also they offer that communities can do ranked choice voting. That does not mean we're doing ranked choice voting, or we have to, or anything like that, and they know South Fulton is not. And so, anyway, it's just in there for the communities that choose that. But wanted to clarify that. Vacating a little piece along Granville that is fairly standard, so we'll have a presentation on that. If you have any questions, let me know. And readopting our city standards plan and specification, we do that regularly as well. Anybody have any questions about those things? No? Okay. They're fairly straightforward.
I noticed the ranked choice voting is less expensive this time around. It surprised me because it's always been more expensive.
Yeah, it is surprising. I think it's less popular as well. There are communities that did ranked choice voting 2 years ago that will not be doing it this time.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. So we'll see some. Probably still will, but there are less.
I know. I don't think the Sandy folks like it.
I don't. Yeah. So.
Recorder Crookston has talked to many of those cities, and I think you're right, Mayor.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll be doing it.
That dropped, yeah, from doing it last election.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then we'll have a discussion on a potential action item, which you all know we can. This is not the meeting for us to really get into this, but we'll have a discussion of reconsideration on whether or not we're going to reopen the development agreement with the RISE development or not. So we'll talk about that in that meeting as well. Any questions? No? Okay. All right. Well, the best part of this meeting is now we're here. We are thrilled to have the Planning Commission here with us. We appreciate you guys coming. Thank you. Steve, thanks for joining us online. We know we're missing a couple of folks, but this is a conversation we look forward to and appreciate you guys coming. It used to be that we did this, I mean, at least when we started, you know, we started then doing it once, or maybe we did it twice one year,
twice.
You know. Since COVID, we haven't started doing it again. A lot of things were wrecked because of COVID, and so we're just getting back to it, you know, and appreciate the chance to sit down with you. And think it's a valuable thing that I'd love us to continue to do twice a year. If you guys are open to that, you know, sit down and collaborate. Anyway, and then we have a little bit of training that we need to hit tonight as well, if we can. That being said, it's always been a good process that we get together and sit down and chat and have discussions and collaborate on some things. And so before I bring up anything specific or anything, my understanding is you guys have a couple of specific things you'd like to maybe bring up, ask, talk about, whatever. So I will turn to Chair Hollis and see if you want to take the lead on that.
I'll see if I can remember our list. The number one item, though, it comes to our attention because it's what we hear the most about, and that is infill projects and Daybreak. And so we've got an opportunity, the city has an opportunity where they're going to bring in another large master plan community. And so we wanted to discuss and see what the city council had learned from Daybreak and what lessons they've learned from that process that they might apply to this new development potentially, but then also bring that concern to you about residents being verbally promised things by various parties, being led to believe that conceptual materials are going to be the reality when indeed every single one that we've ever been brought is marked that this is conceptual. But just how do we work with both Daybreak and a new master plan community to make sure that they're advertising accurately and forwardly with residents of our city?
We get those questions too. Yeah. So I think it's nice to be able to have this conversation with us to try to figure it out. Because I think, at least from a master plan development and a master development agreement perspective, the city, especially the staff who's been here longer than the elected officials, but we've got, Brad's been here for a while since the beginning of that, and even those of us who've been here the least amount of time, we're still in our sixth year. So I think there's quite a bit about the MDA that maybe we've learned from Daybreak, but they aren't related to those questions. I think there are
two issues there, absolutely.
I think that question, we hear it, and I see it on their Facebook page as well. People say all the time, I was told this would be this, or I was told this would never be this, or we were told this, or why are they doing this? You know, there's a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I've seen a lot of comments that say, well, did you read the paperwork when you signed on your house? It says very clearly, you know, a lot of people respond that way and say, it says really clearly this, but also we can't make sure that everyone who's marketing, when I bought my house, which I'm surrounded by the largest master plan community, almost in the nation practically, but is not part of it, we're the little square that isn't part of it. They went out of their way to make sure we didn't even know that the largest master plan development in the state was coming all around us. Hmm. Weird. And I was in my second year of being mayor when I said, hey, when is that property right there on the corner of my neighborhood going to be a park? We've been waiting like 16 years. The city was like, this is never going to be a park. Yes, it is. They promised me that when we moved in. All of our neighbors are asking me, okay, good. Can you make that happen now? Because we've been waiting forever. And the city's like, that was never a park. Never a park. We can't, I don't know who told you that. Everybody selling us our homes told us that, or everybody building our homes told us that, and then the neighbors told us that, you know what I mean? So we hear a lot of that in and outside of Daybreak. The only thing, and I want to hear from everybody, but the only thing that comes to my mind initially is if things that are going in Daybreak are prescriptive, the allowances that they have are prescriptive per the master development agreement. Is it actually worth? And I don't mean worth because people don't deserve their say, but if it's already decided and there's nothing you can do about it and there's nothing we can do about it, is having a public hearing about it for people to give input that we can't change what they're asking for or fix what they're saying should or shouldn't happen, because that's all been decided well before we were here. Are we making that process more frustrating for them and for everyone else, for you guys?
That's a good question.
Right?
Absolutely.
Mayor,
what do you think?
I think some of what happened early on from the developer standpoint was in their minds, maybe at least partly conceptual. And the problem is residents or prospective residents, that becomes hard-coded in their minds. And so I think we ought to communicate with the developer that, hey, anything you communicate is you know, you're going to be held to a pretty high standard for anything that you show residents or prospective residents is going to happen. So keep that in mind, and so that we don't have that disconnect. The other thing I'll say is there's a lot of speculation and hearsay. For example, the park you're talking about, Mayor, I don't know if it was at one time actually on a map or, you know, on a, you know, conceptual design. I mean, how many of us have heard that a resident says, well, I talked to that farmer and he said he was never going to sell. And if he did, he would never develop this part of the property. I mean, it's all, you know, you can't rely on any of that. And so I think we have to dismiss at least part of that kind of hearsay and word of mouth conjecture.
Yeah. Agreed.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, having lived in the Daybreak community for 15 years or so now, I've definitely seen what you've been describing. It's one of the things that kind of got me involved in the community, and I know it affected Tamara as well, was the Harvest Sun parcel that was next to the community center, and all hell broke out over those townhomes. And I ended up being on a committee to help kind of try and resolve the issue with that. And, you know, we still had kind of handcuffs placed on us by the developer of what we could do. One of the things, though, going forward when we're making agreements, I would like to be able to say, you know, you said this is going to be civic use. Your first plan for a civic use didn't work out. There's 100 more different civic uses that could go there. And to try and tighten that up so that usage in that area would have to stay the same, I think that would help calm some of the issues. But, yeah, you know, right now with how it is in Daybreak, as long as they're within their agreement, they can go in and kind of do whatever they want.
And as long as they put conceptual on the map.
Yeah. And that is something they did get better after the Harvest Sun debacle. They did start putting conceptual on all of their documentation. So I think a lesson was learned there. But I think there's another storm brewing. I don't want to go talk about it in this meeting. But to where that same type of thing, residents are expecting one thing to happen, and backroom chatter is it's not. And so we have to kind of figure out ways to, yeah, work towards some type of resolve to help residents understand that. Kind of going back to what Brad was saying about the, you know, the farmer, you know, saying they'd never sell their field, or the residents we had in a couple of weeks ago, my heart broke for them because that lot where the trees got torn down, yeah, it totally changed their view. But they didn't own that property. And so they didn't, you know, really have a say in what would happen there. And so we got to also respect the property owner's rights. Go ahead, Tamara.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. The property rights, and you guys hear that all the time. One of the things you said that kind of triggered me is you talked about infill projects in Daybreak, and I have never viewed them as infill projects. To me, it's one big master plan. In the South Jordan City, we have infill, but Daybreak itself, I wouldn't call it infill. It's going to be a whole master plan. So they don't necessarily leave infill portions of their city.
You ended up with the Harvest Sun, then where the non-denominational church was supposed to be.
And they put townhomes.
Yeah.
But, and the other point, and I don't know if you're completely aware of this or not, but the developer for Daybreak is not necessarily going to be the developer for this annexed property. Like, it's a completely separate development. So I think all of us, as Planning Commission and as council members, the message that needs to be sent is there's Daybreak, and then there's this annexed portion, and it's two completely different. It will be different master plans, different developers, different players. It's originating as Rio Tinto land. But it's going to evolve.
Daybreak 2.0 is not right.
Not at all.
Yeah.
It could look so different. We don't know yet. Like, we're in that process. So that was my one comment. But I agree. We've learned a lot. We live in it.
Yeah. We've lived
and
it.
And there are things that happened in my development that didn't get repeated, that were poorly done, because I'm in the first phase of Daybreak. And so things were learned in Daybreak, but also things have been learned as we've all sat and watched it I've been there 19 years. So I for sure am going to be watchful that we try and improve upon it. Mm-hmm. But I think we only have so much control, but we will definitely exercise whatever we can to help make it improved. I don't know if that helps, but
I can just say that it's a tricky deal with the master developer, and I pushed them to put signs up saying future development site, which
they started
doing that.
Yep, after the follow up.
you know, Don Tingey was there when I was bloodying my knuckles on the table with him.
Getting, over the buffer around my neighborhood.
Getting some buffer around her neighborhood. You know? And so I guess the question I have really is for Ryan, and that is there any way we can write anything into the development agreement that kind of locks down this kind of thing a little more? My guess is we've got a 20, 30, maybe a 40-year development time horizon, and so asking them to completely lay it out day one and stick to it is
not going to happen.
Not realistic, but is there anything we can do to kind of lock them down a little bit more?
Well, one, it depends on what we mean, lock them down more. But to start, why don't we talk about a few of the public things with the new one, the new development that probably we haven't talked about in a public setting. Is very soon, maybe next meeting, certainly within the next few meetings, their petition for annexation will be considered by the council to accept or not. We all know there is a petition that was heard by the council. The public hearing will be in one of the upcoming meetings. You've seen the map, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's been public for a while. And we know that the west, everything west of U-111 is more of a much longer term thing because that affects their mining operations. They've kind of talked about that in generalities. And so anything coming sooner would be east of U-111 in the shorter term. And I think they've talked about that. That's in their talking points. Have you seen their webpage of talking points and stuff? You've got that. And so all of those things start giving us a basis of where we're at. Now, as far as where we're negotiating, working with them on figuring things out, there's obviously density question that they're talking to the council about. And the council has been very consistent with all developers, whether it's them, whether it's been the South Valley Water Reclamation piece, which is about 200 acres in the, what is it, southwest corner of the city, and any others, that similar or daybreak densities are what the council would be able to tolerate. I think you've been public about that. I don't think I'm launching any new thing into space there. Daybreak densities is 5 units an acre with a 25% open space requirement, which is required, if I remember right, by the PZ zone. Isn't the 25 in the PZ zone? I think it's in the actual zone.
Might be in the zone, but it's also in the community structure plans.
It kicks into the agreements and everything. But I think the PC zone itself requires it. If it doesn't, it has some guidelines there. So all of that is what you're going to be seeing coming in some form or fashion. Now, what does that mean? Well, who could have told you in 2004 that Daybreak would look like it does today? Right? No one could. And in 2008 and 2009. For those of us who were here, they completely switched how they were building things to respond to a very changing market. Well, it was early 9-10 when the whole housing market changed. Daybreak did a good job at keeping themselves, and also it kept the city growing through there because they were able to change product. But that's when you started to see some of the shifts that you guys were talking about, where you were kind of expecting this, and then they put that on hold, and they went and did this. And then they came back, and those not infill. Then they put the stuff in here that they could sell, and they started piecing out more and stuff. And then in the last, 5 to 7 years, Don, Dustin, we've seen Daybreaks selling off 20, 40-acre chunks to, say, an Ivory Homes, and they'll build a product on that. That started in the last, not 10 years, but somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And so we've seen them morph and change. So the question is, can we do stuff in the agreement? Well, I'm sure we can as long as they agree to it, right? The agreement requires them to say yes, too. How much do you want to? Because that affects what the city is able to. I mean, how much control do you want? Do you want to own every subdivision as they come in? In other words, have essentially a rezone process on every one? Well, not necessarily. That would never work. You know, did we give them too much license? Maybe not. Are we unrealistic in our expectations somewhat that people, when we give them an outlet, and this is kind of where you and the mayor were talking, Chair Hollis, we give them an outlet of a public hearing for what I call the city, or sorry, the planning commission for these type items. I call them a quality control body. Now, I work quality control at a graphite fiber plant. It's a very important job, but you feel pretty useless 90% of the time because you're just making sure it's done right and you put a stamp on it. But you are there, and it's very important because the person who gets the lemon product really wants to hold the quality control inspector, whatever, accountable, right? So it's one of those thankless but important jobs. So how much quality control do we really have at a subdivision? That's what you're usually seeing with Daybreak, right, the preliminary subdivision. How much do you really get to do? You're getting assurance from staff and from the Daybreak engineer that it's built according, or that it's, that the plat is compliant with the ordinances and the standards. Tonight we have standards in place, or that we'll adopt again. And that's what the plat says, and you're being assured that. So when they come up and talk to you about why they don't like it, as you know, how much relevance can you give that? Can you vote no because they don't like it?
No.
No. Does it frustrate them when they find out you can't vote no?
They don't believe us.
Yes, exactly.
That leads me to what the heart of, I think, your question. It goes to process. Oh, okay. Let's ask Patrick, and then I'll ask my question. I'm sorry. Mr. Harris, please.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is kind of going, Ryan kind of started to talk about some of the things that were going through my mind, but, you know, what I'm kind of thinking is, you know, I know a lot of times residents are promised certain things, but I kind of look at, you know, what is our role as a city in this, and, you know, how open do we want the agreement, or how detailed do we want the agreement, you know, and what they will tell us is, you know, hey, this is a long-term project. We have no idea what the future demand is for certain things such as office or a number of other things. And so there has to be, you know, some flexibility. And so, I mean, I would say a conceptual, you know, anything that's put out there conceptually probably, you know, could change based on how demands for things change over time. And I just want to make sure we're careful that we don't overstep as well. And that we go in there and say, hey, you know, if you promise something, you have to absolutely make sure you deliver on it. That's a good thing to do, but we also have to be able to allow for flexibility for when things do alter and things do change, the different demands for things. And so I just want to make sure that we're not overstepping and that we're not requiring things of them that we wouldn't ask another developer, to do. So if they promised a pool and a pool doesn't go in, well, have we required any other developer to put a pool in, you know? Probably not, you know, or a community center of some sort, or whatever the cases be. We require any other developer of a community center, and we'll know. So part of this is really a civil issue. You know, if someone really feels that they were promised one thing and didn't get something else, and I mean, I really feel that's a civil issue, and I'm sure, I know they have their I's, you know, dotted and their T's crossed how they will say it's conceptual, and probably people don't have a whole lot of recourse, but I do feel for the people, but I think we have to have the right balance where we don't overstep, but then we, you know, see what we can do to, I think we do communicate with, you know, with the developer that say, hey, we had some issues with this, and anything you do to reduce, you know, the frequency of this would be better for us and our residents. But I don't know how much we can tie their hands. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Mr. Catmull, please.
Yeah, similar to those comments, I wonder how that, you know, anything that we try to do that's more restrictive would be received by the legislature.
That is a very, very good point.
And so as I think about the times when heated issues come up, and it feels like people just want to make sure they're heard and they have enough time to work through the issues. And 10 days doesn't always seem like a lot, depending on how big of an impact it's real or perceived to someone. And so I wonder if, and I don't know if we can do this, but something like broker a listening session between Daybreak, this new master, you know, master planned commission where you bring the developer or developers and key influencers or people there together to just listen and see if we can have a kind of address some issues before waiting on 10-day notice because something drops in their mailbox.
Thank you. I think you hit on what's at the heart of this for me too. People want to be heard, right? They want the opportunity to be heard. And what I wonder, and I need somebody to tell me, who's been here way longer than me and has a law degree.
There's Steve.
Yeah. And Steven's at the table. So.
Yeah.
Welcome. Just getting official now.
I need someone to tell me. Are we, only because we just went through so much of this during the legislative session, talking about what's administrative role and what's legislative role, are we putting the Planning Commission just by our practice of saying, okay, we have public hearings on this and we see all the plats and it comes through and then people come and they don't want it, they don't like it, and your hands are tied and they don't believe you and they're like, then why are you here? Are we...
Yes.
Yes, right? Are we saying... Because we go through the same thing. Yeah. People will come, and especially if it's about daybreak, right? But people will come if they have concerns about what the school district is doing. We have as much authority to say daybreak can't do that as we do to say the school district can't do that, right? Necessarily, because it's not the same. That's not our jurisdiction. That was already decided in the Master Development Agreement. And part of me, just because of all the time we've spent on this legislative session over what's administrative and what isn't, are we putting an administrative role in a legislative seat of the Planning Commission that they can't actually do anything about, and so it's only going to be frustrating for you and for the people coming in all the time?
So
is that the right place for them to come and be heard?
So yes, that's a great question, because the legislature in 174 made it very clear now, and 174, SB 174 is Senator Fillmore's bill, and what... among many other things it does is it standardizes essentially our process, or one very similar to ours, because he likes our process of taking the preliminary, well, in some case, final plat process out of the legislative body's hands. So there are many cities where the city council is actually the one deciding final plat. And it puts the city council, and Mr. Marler especially, but Mr. Shelton will remember on appeals. I think appeals kind of disappeared.
Horrible.
But Mr. Marler remembers even before appeals, they have final plat. And they sit legislatively, right? They like to make laws, and they like to this broad scope, the same scope you guys have when you make recommendations. And they don't like to be hemmed in by rules because they like to make the rules. Paraphrasing, if I offend, please correct me later.
It's very
but you'd much rather make the rules than follow.
We can throw pie tonight.
Yes, you can. But so in many cities, and what developers are running into, they go in front of the city council, and city council saying, well, we like this. We're going to impute this broad authority to this very administrative, narrow authority item. And they're just running into a wall, and it's causing frustration. The League of Cities and Towns, everybody, a lot of cities hate this still, but they got to a place where they're going to a process like ours. But in that discussion was, how valuable is the public hearing? And there's kind of two conversations going on, so I'm going to separate them out. So let's take on the public hearing, because this is where you guys can tell the council. I've sat with you a few times, a few months there before Gray came, and Gray sat with you since, and then I advised the Planning Commission for about 12 years. How valuable do you guys find the public hearing on a preliminary plat? How often does the public come in and tell you something, whether it's 10 days notice or if we give them 15 or 20 days notice, that wasn't already understood by the developer and or staff and that they didn't have an answer for?
It's uncommon, and it's almost always irrigation. Some ditch master that...
Now, how often in daybreak where they came in and super graded the whole site and then went back and...
There was one time with some water issues that we were caught unaware, and I think the city... I think Jeremy had been out to observe some flooding, but it's rare.
Okay. That sound... Commissioner Catmull, you still have your hand up. Sorry, Mayor, I didn't mean to call on some, but...
No, I just didn't know where it...
But is that your experience too, Commissioner Catmull?
So I think it's been a mixed bag. Like, one of the most positive experiences, and I'm forgetting the road, but it's somewhere between 102nd and South Jordan, where they had like two-story homes, and they built a three- or four-story inside there. And we couldn't do anything, but what was great, however it happened, they did come informed, and they actually, the people, the citizens that came and commented saying, we understand you can't do anything, but they really did want a bent, and they really did want to fight for what they wanted. And they thanked us for striving to listen to them and seek those angles, all those angles. And so just sometimes, even though we don't like love meetings, long meetings or something like that, it does feel like, I don't know, people just want to be heard. And they want to make they do like to be heard. And I've seen that for 30 years that between Riverton and South Jordan, all the meetings I go to, similar concepts. I didn't know that field was going to be homes. And it's an age-old problem.
So to circle this back, because I think that's a great lead-in, and got a text from Steve on this, and it was kind of said by Commissioner Catmull, circle this back, what can we do different in the future master plan community that's coming that we're not doing Daybreak? One thing that's unique about Daybreak is the agreement doesn't actually require them to bring their subdivision plats to you. They have willingly followed the process that the rest of the city has, but it exempts them from it. Now, the rest of the city has been doing it, and so they said, yeah, we'll just do it. That's fine. They've never fought us on it. I've never known of any issues with it. Have you? I asked Greg because he's one of those who've been here since the beginning. But I would say if you're not finding huge value in it, maybe in the agreement, instead of requiring a preliminary subdivision from us in a public hearing, we require some sort of community meeting, open house that they do prior to submitting a preliminary subdivision to us, or prior after preliminary and prior to final, where they're meeting, and I think Commissioner Catmull said this, that they meet with the developer as a group, and they can have whatever discussion. Now, if they still don't like it, they're going to call you and or the council members. I mean, you get a few emails every week and a few calls every week and have me chase down this thing or that thing because someone's out measuring property. And who they get, people are going to do that. But the community meeting, that's one thing that I thought was a really great comment that we could stick in an agreement, is that between preliminary subdivision and final subdivision, you have a community meeting that you host, you do. We might send a planner or someone from the city there to so that we know what's going on. Would that be as good in your mind as having the public meeting in front of you?
My only concern with that part of it is we've had some applicants come before us and said they have had a community meeting, and none of the residents who have attended said they ever heard about it.
Yeah.
And so just what's the process of actually not enforcing, but overseeing, make sure.
Well, yeah, enforcement. Yeah, we would require
we could even say
for like this one, we could even say all the community meetings will be at Station 63 or 64, or someplace that we know they happen, and we schedule them. But from the Planning Commission, if we can get that side down, because that's a great point, and this would be only for the new development, because that's the specific question, and we're still working on that agreement and how that works out. Do you think that would help the residents more than the current process? Because in the end, this is about the residents, right? And what gives them the most access to those who can change things, because they don't let us change our plats a lot. If they get enough feedback, they might change it.
You change their plats a lot, because the way it's set up, at least with Daybreak, is if they meet all the requirements and the boxes are checked, your hands are tied in those meetings. And same with us. You know, people come in and say, we don't like this, whatever. And they don't understand. Well, why can't you?
Yeah.
You know, why can't you change this? Because
you don't even see them. Like, right. You
but
see them because you signed the plat, but no one else on the
right,
council
right,
sees
right.
it.
But we get phone calls and emails, and we get,
yeah.
why, you know.
Well, one of Council Member Zander's
all the stuff
first
on social
meetings.
Media. You know, I was shocked at how many comments that I've seen since the announcements of the ballpark. A couple of residents in Daybreak saying they're ruining Daybreak because now it's becoming so dense. Why are they ruining Daybreak? And actually, it was mostly Daybreak residents that said, "You're kidding me, right? Do you have any idea where you moved to? Did you read the paperwork when you signed it that said it was going to be this?
Yeah,
this is what, and if you
left.
Didn't pay attention to that, you should have, because it's on your paperwork, you know." So the residents themselves, they kind of, you know, back and forth. But I read these things and I think, wow, there's only so much we can do about that. There's not a lot any of us can do about that. But it still goes back to my fundamental question. Are we giving you a job to do that already checks the boxes so there's not actually anything you can do? And if so, is that just giving grief to everyone in the process, to the public and to you guys, because it's already checks the boxes. It's already approved.
And with this other requirement that we can do with them, because we're still negotiating, give the residents what they think they're trying to get out of you, or at least as much.
I think there's value in both, honestly. I think they want to tell their city representatives what they think, but I do think there is tremendous value in requiring the developers to hold those meetings and hear the community members out. A lot of times if we have a controversial issue that comes in, if the community members have already communicated with the developer, a lot of those issues can be resolved before they even get to us.
Right.
But I think we'll always have people that still want to come to their city representatives, whether it's the city council or the planning commission, that want to be heard. Whether or not we can do anything, I think, is a whole separate issue from their desire to be heard. But I do think there's tremendous value in requiring that of developers, particularly for the new.
Because I know the developers new are mimicking similar language in the Daybreak one, that they won't go through a site plan preliminary with
the plan. That's part of the zone, even.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's part of
the
zone.
I have a question. Is there precedence of other cities that are doing it this way? Like, we're talking about a complete shift here.
Yeah, there's several
cities
that
do this where they require... I mean, who else has a master plan like this? Nobody.
Well, not a master plan, but cities that have taken public hearing out of the administrative process.
Who's doing
that? But even, I know of cities who have done open house requirements before a public hearing, or open house requirements, no public hearing. The reason I was texting Ryan and it got me up to this table, so I sort of forgot it, is, the prior developer, not LHM, had started to hold a limited number of open houses. And I think it helped. I think it helped because sometimes we're kind of the middleman, right, between the residents and a developer that owns the property, is heavily involved in the HOA, is heavily involved still in the resident's life. And so it's kind of an awkward position for us to be in. And so, you know, because we're asking the same questions that the residents are. Well, what exactly will that building look like? Well, it's just a subdivision at this point. Sometimes they tell us, sometimes they don't. And so sometimes I feel like maybe it's better to hear that from the developer. And yeah, maybe we could put some guardrails. It may not be the perfect solution. There may be other reasons to hold something at the city. I don't know. But it seemed like things started to kind of get better. And it all stemmed from your...
from the wonderful...
from harvest. Yeah, where it, again, didn't solve all problems.
Mine.
But they were doing it. I don't know how much LHM has been doing it. And it's something that certainly we could bring up with them again. Similar to the signs, they're willing to do some things because they're still close to the residents in a lot of ways.
Their CEO lives there.
Yeah, and it's different than other instances, because I've heard it too, where we encourage, that's all I can do at this point, is encourage a developer to go talk to people, and then we hear conflicting reports about whether that happened or not.
Right.
The master developer... that's a different situation. We have one development group, whether it changes or not, that we can hold responsible, that we have a relationship with, that's here for years, that may not be true for, you know, a small subdivision where a developer comes in, builds, and leaves.
And on that note, I'll say this. I think you'll see a much longer term investment. I mean, not that the Daybreak wasn't longer term, but it's been sold twice now. I don't know if you'll see that model again. There may be other models that happen, but because this is so close to the mine, there's a lot more interest to protect than clear down by Warbanger Highway as to the mine gate, right? This is right across the street from mine gate. And so every indication I've had from them is that they're very invested on everything that goes on. And they may not just be letting a development company take completely over. I mean, it's not a guarantee of anything, but council, would you agree that they're sensitive as to what goes on next to their gate? And
they seem to want to control it.
Yeah. And so we'll see how that shapes out over time. So in that, though, is that kind of a direction that you feel comfortable? Now, from the standpoint of also talking to their public representatives, there's still public comment on the city council, and you guys have it on yours. So if they wanted to come in, talk about an item not on the agenda, they still have that access. They still have email. They can call. It's not hard to get a hold of people. If we went that direction, which I know they'd be inclined to do, the new legislation kind of is saying, in fact, the developers wanted no allowance for public hearings on administrative things.
To be clear, I piped up very strongly
about that in the UEOC meeting and said the public comment portion. And when I went,
you were the only one who piped up.
I was the only one who piped up about it. But also, I went to every caucus, community caucus that are Utah League of Cities and Towns. I went to every meeting. I popped into everyone and listened. And that was of top concern, and it is for us as well. Certainly, we here in South Jordan don't want anything that's going to cut the public out of the process. They need to be heard. They deserve to be heard and engaged. But I agree. The thing I'm concerned about is right now, the way it's set up is that process set up so that it's so late in the game that it doesn't matter what they come and say. That's what I don't.
Subdivision site plan will always be administrative, which means it's the rules on the books, and you become quality control. I hate it when people say, well, they're just a rubber stamp. They're not a rubber stamp. You're quality control, and that's a very important thing. And the question is it needed in a daybreak-like situation, or can we do other things that will accomplish the same thing? Because we have less of those ditches and stuff. That's the example I always give to when people ask me, what do you learn in public hearing? You always learn about some water that's been flowing somewhere for 40 years that you didn't know about. and that's mainly, and there's been other examples and stuff too, but that's the main thing. So I'm not saying for the whole citywide, but for this new one, does that sound like a model that if we were working on would fit what you brought up in this discussion?
I do like the idea of requiring that meeting, the public open houses, I would hope would define like what area of noticing needs to happen. I told Councilman McGuire this. We texted about what the role of the commission was about a year ago, and I do feel like an important part is those public hearings. Is it appropriate to keep it in this case? I don't know. One thing that our commission has discussed, though, is educating the public on what type of evidence they need to bring. And I don't know if that's something that you can accomplish in a short notice.
So that's
but letting
on the
them
CUP
know.
Side, right? Because that doesn't apply on the subdivision side. That's
I mean, even with the subdivision.
But even with that, you need to bring us evidence that
it doesn't comply.
What doesn't comply? You bring the regulate.
Tell them what they need to bring. Tell them what would be information we can consider.
Yeah.
We can do that. I think I talked over you.
Yeah, so I still support a public meeting where the public has an opportunity to state an opinion or state, you know, hey, here's a problem. I realize that pretty much most or all of what you do is administrative, but it gives the public an opportunity. And by the way, I would support the open houses as well. But I think having that opportunity to stand before public, you know, or appointed officials and state, hey, here's a problem that I see. Even if all you have is administrative powers, you can still say, you know, that sounds like that's a real problem. I think you ought to stand before the city council during their public comment period and let them know. And just so you know, we are in our minutes, we are letting the city council and staff know. And I always read the public, and Mr. Schindler sends them out.
Yep.
I always read those minutes.
So do I.
And I look for any issue that was presented by the public in those comments. And so I think that is an opportunity for us to learn what's going on in those public settings.
Return to Mr. Catmull.
Yeah, I want to maybe see if we can also tie it back to an idea earlier around when conceptual changes. That might be a trigger to have an open house. So if there is a conceptual map change, because if you look at the zoning map, it's just planned community, this big swath that is even in eight years when we do another general plan, it's just going to be a big blob that no one really understands. But if they're changing it because, well, people aren't working from home now, and so, or are not going to the office, and so things change. or not as many people are going to the office. And so I think that might be a way to inform people and keep them educated on a longer term perspective about what's conceptually going on around them.
I like that idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
And that would be, in my mind, the only conceptual plans, and correct me, I'm not the planner, but mainly we see it as they give us a preliminary site plan. Once they come into DRC and start that process, we don't get like a concept plan, right?
We don't have concept plans at all in any part of the city, but they also...
But we do on a rezone. That's the one time I've seen it.
Yes, concept plan.
But
that's what we should go.
Which wouldn't happen with
Daybreak. Exactly.
Yeah, I think the thing with Daybreak is the comment that came before is maybe, and I can't remember who said it, but tightening what a land use is. On the one hand, it's very broad, and that's allowed Daybreak to succeed in many ways. On the other hand, it's hard when it is so broad that you can change from a church to townhomes, right? And so I think that's more about how we define the land uses than necessarily having this trigger of, because in a lot of ways you'd have to amend the agreement, right, to change those land uses. And then, of course, that would trigger some sort of a public meeting of some sort. But
Thinking definitionally in the agreement, we
That's just kind of tighten it up. That was a comment that was made early on to really tighten up, and it's one that I wrote down because I think that's a good perspective. So, and maybe that addresses some of what Commissioner Catmull just.
So you're saying about civic use being a church or a townhome, they can't both be. Yeah, that's a pretty broad definition of civic.
Exactly.
So I think we've got some notes from this. Are you okay if I kind
of? I'd like to move us on from this too, because we've got more to discuss. But I also think. We have good information here to make some decisions and have more conversation and kind of zero this in.
If it's okay with you, there's a direction move that kind of continues this, but takes it kind of the role of the commission, the CUP process, which I know you had on your list. Is that okay if
move
us there?
Mm-hmm.
And Greg is prepared to give us a brief overview. You guys deal with CUPs a lot. You guys used to deal with them somewhat on appeals and stuff. And so, Greg, could you give us just a brief overview of CUPs and then your opinion of how valuable CUPs are?
Conditional use permits for anyone.
Yeah, sorry, conditional use permits. I apologize.
No, it's okay. It's good.
And I was about to start explaining. Go ahead, Greg.
It's a special subset of weird, strange people who understand all of this language, and we're all part of it, right? But it takes a minute. There's a learning curve.
Weird meaning really wonderful. 3 minutes.
Ryan's time, though.
You guys.
That equals like an hour.
You know, prophets are known in their own country. So you guys deal with these a lot. Don't give them the thought. You guys deal with CUPs a lot, so you know the detrimental effect, you know, lease mitigation, all that stuff. So, counsel, this is for you.
Thank you. Well, let me just first say we've got a very dedicated dedicated planning commission, and they sometimes work very hard on these conditional uses, and they always work very hard on them. But the question really, I think, that comes up the most is what's evidence of a detrimental effect? And what we see in the hearings is somebody comes in and says, hey, I have a real estate license, and I can tell you that this is going to seriously affect property values in the area. And is that substantial evidence that shows a detrimental effect that would open the door for the Planning Commission to impose conditions or even deny the conditional use permit? And that's always the struggle. And in this particular case, the Supreme Court of Utah has ruled that, no, that's not substantial evidence. Now, if you had an appraiser come in and submit an appraisal and
and all, you know, and they were certified and all that kind of stuff, that might be a different thing. Now, one of the CUPs we had in the city that I think that the Planning Commission handled especially well was the come and go that's now being constructed down here on Redwood Road. All the neighbors came in and they read us all these benzene articles before the planning about the dangers of benzene in gas stations. And they all lived next to this proposed gas station. And then there was evidence presented about the noise. Okay, so that was sounded like substantial evidence, you know, that benzene can cause all these harms and so forth, but is that evidence that's going to allow them to deny a conditional use permit or impose conditions? Well, the problem is with the conditional use permit is it does still say a use, and that you that the legislative body, you guys, had said gas stations are a conditional use. So it's already been ruled that a gas station can go there. And what they're asking is that the Planning Commission deny the conditional use permit because no gas station could go there. But that's already been ruled by the legislative body that they can go there. And so the Planning Commission, I think wisely, even though that evidence was presented, did not impose conditions and approve the conditional use permit. Now, on the other hand, with the noise, I think some substantial evidence was presented there, and they then imposed a condition that there be a higher fence imposed along the fence line there to help mitigate some of the conditional, some of the harms. One other thing I'll just say, since I've been given so much time.
Evidently, you have an hour.
I didn't say you had to use it all.
That I kind of had forgotten about this in our code on conditional uses. It says, in addition to the application for a conditional use permit, the planning department, and you may guys may do this more than I realize, may require other information or studies to address potential detrimental effects of the proposed conditional use that have been reasonably anticipated by the city in its review of the application. So staff is the first one to look at these, first body to look at these detrimental effects, and they do have the power to require studies and other things to bring more substantial evidence, which I think is one of the frustrations, is a lot of the citizens, they don't understand what a conditional use permit is, and so they don't really come prepared with the kind of evidence that they would need to impose the supposed detrimental effect.
And that's the same with the subdivision. They don't come with the evidence. They don't know what's required. They're not looking at it like Greg or I would. So with that as a premise, the question I have for you as a planning commission and you as a council, and kind of leading into a conversation, Steve, Greg, the other Greg, and I've had is, well, first, tell them what you called conditional use permits to me earlier today.
Oh, they're a outdated dinosaur, really. When I started the practice, they were a way for a city to make the applicant prove that they weren't going to cause any problems. So I was representing all these oil refineries up in Woods Cross, and EPA would say, you got to do this, and this Woods Cross didn't, you know, they'd build all around it, and they didn't like it, so they didn't use it. Now I think a lot of things come before our planning commission that they don't really need to go before the planning commission.
So the question I have for you as a council and for you as a planning commission is, would you be amenable to start looking at the conditional uses we have in the city? Like, I'll pick three pretty low-hanging fruit. One is the accessory buildings. I know you get several of those where you want to build a big barn or something in the backyard, and it's a CUP, and now you've got neighbors saying it's too hot, it blocks this. And instead of leaving it as a conditional use, we just make it a permitted use. But before we do that, you go in and you put in the regulation. It can't be so high or whatever. And we've got planners that are capable of setting up a matrix to help you study. And then in your role as the planning commission, then advise and give a recommendation on the change in the ordinance to take this from conditional use to a permitted use with these restrictions to the council for an ordinance change. Another one that would go on there is the drive-throughs on like fast food places and stuff. We see them all the time, but they're conditional uses, and everybody says, oh, the lights are going to kill me, and we've heard the story. So is it something through regulations working with our wonderful planning staff and you guys taking lead as a planning commission that you could have the discussions, work with staff to draft the ordinance, and then give them something? And then the third one I had on here are ADUs. We know, especially the internal ones, the state legislature's taken that over. We still have the externals, the guest houses and others. But again, is that things we can regulate through actual regulations and not leaving it up to case by case? These neighbors are upset and they're going to come in, not understand the process. We have to go through it all. And that, would that be amenable to both bodies to start picking these off one by one and eventually get to a place where we have some to none on the conditional use front? Well, very
one,
few.
One comment on the bulk of the accessory garages.
Greg, can I ask you to come up here just so that
people online
can
hear
you?
Yeah, we can't hear you. There's a chair right here.
That is officially the hot seat. Good luck.
Our code is written right now with several regulations. And the way it says, if they can't meet those regulations, they can go to the Planning Commission and they can issue a conditional use permit. The simple way, I guess, to not, we would just say you either meet the regulations or you don't. And that's what I understand.
Well, and so, to relook at the regulations and make sure they're appropriate
they
in all circumstances.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the Planning Commission is unique, because you've heard a lot from the public, you live in the community, you see a lot, and you're not dealing with some of the legislative items they are, the legislature and all that, that they're distracted by, in a good way distracted. And so you can take that laboring or on the land use front and go over those regulations. Because, yeah, with what Jake did, a lot of that is in that formula now.
And for staff, and for me, especially on the, say, the height of a building, if it says in the code that it can't exceed the height of the main structure, but the Planning Commission can approve one higher, what's the detrimental effect? Oh, it's too tall? Well, then why? We should know that in the first place.
So I think the good thing might be have a conversation, say, if you've got a 20-foot or 15-foot building and the rest of the buildings in the area could be 35 feet, because if I'm remembering right, isn't 35 our minimum generally? But the house is 20 feet. Then how do you strike that balance? Well, I'd say delegate that to you guys so that you have the discretion and bring back a good recommendation to council. But council, would you be amenable to that sort of things and eventually basically work our way out of most conditional uses, if not all?
I like that idea.
I like that too. I love the recommendation having you guys work with staff to figure that out after hearing all the people come and say, my neighbor wants to
you
build
have
this
the
in their backyard, whatever.
How do you start to get feedback both from the public about new things that need to be considered in the future? If we work ourselves out of a job, so to say.
So I actually see this as expanding the job that you have.
Guess,
you're more into the land use development, and as like the legislature changes things and there's code changes, there's going to be many things that we have to look at. After every session, we're looking at business licensing changes, alcohol changes, land use changes. We reexamine, do we want to keep doing, even if we're not forced to change, do we want to keep doing that? And my vision would be, well, it's really Steve's vision that he's imparted on me, involve you much more on that land use side and maybe some of just the quality control functions might increase, might decrease, but you'll be just as busy, but you'll be actually working with the planners on planning the city rather than reacting to applications.
Mayor?
Yes, please.
If the council says this is a priority, we should look at this, then I am more than comfortable coming to you and say, okay, Planning Commission, here's our current regulation. Let's walk through it. Any thoughts or suggestions about what needs to change to then bring back in recommendation form to the council? The other thing that I'll mention specifically with conditional uses
is, and this was right before my time in the planning department, is there were some changes to the structure of the code. We came up with the uses chapter. And even at that time, we had conversations about getting rid of or setting up a structure to get rid of conditional uses. And one of the ways that we did that are called impact control measures. I don't know if you've heard about impact control measures during your meetings, but that's something that's required for, say, a gas station. If it's a gas station in a certain zone, you're required to provide more information, whether that's an operations plan or better buffering or whatever, so that's all baked into our ordinance so that it doesn't become a question. And we've sort of identified at the front, what are the things we don't like about a gas station in this area? What can we do to mitigate that without having that conversation through a conditional use permit? And that's much more clear to an applicant. They know on the upfront, this is what I have to do to build a gas station at this location. And we've said it's a permitted use. And not leaving that to this awkward meeting with the public where people are coming with a misunderstanding about what your role is and how you can condition something.
And that's not to say there won't be a public hearing,
sure,
at the site plan or in other stages. Public involvement is
most conditional uses are part of a site plan. So okay. The project would still be going to the planning commission. There just wouldn't be this extra layer of, it's a conditional use permit, can we put any conditions on it?
Because you'll be spending the next while developing the conditions into it. And if we miss something and we don't have it and we see it as a problem, we can always go amend the ordinance to put it in for the next applicant.
I like that.
One vision of the Planning Commission, and Steve has sold me on this over time, is that it's not as reactive as a body, that it reacts to applications, right? And that's majority of what you do, but also it's much more involved on the planning, reviewing our ordinances, reacting to the legislation on an application, and keeping us at the forefront. I would say when I first got here 17 years ago, we were one of the only cities doing things this way where the city council wasn't seeing everything. And that was a recent change that Mr. Priest had instituted just before I got here. Well, lots have caught up to us. I think there's more we can do to stay at the front of the planning, especially with the complex developments we're getting. I mean, we're not a particularly huge city, but now we'll have two of the biggest, well, probably the two biggest master plan communities in Utah.
We have a big laundry list of items we'd love to address in our code, but we as staff only deal with them, or the Planning Commission sees them occasionally. They rarely arise to your level of decision-making, and so sometimes it's difficult for us to prioritize those things. Though I think potentially bringing some of those issues to the Planning Commission, if you're open to it, could then start to air out some, whether it's CUPs or, you know, we came across a weird fencing issue around pools, just random stuff that is just difficult to deal with because we have to enforce our code. And we know that it's not necessarily everyone's priority, but it's something that we deal with day to day. And so it would be good to get some feedback from an appointed or elected body to say, yes, these are some of the changes we're comfortable even just exploring. So
I would be comfortable saying, if you have things specific that you're like, you know what, we really would like to look at this in the ordinances in our city code, whatever, mm-hmm. I would be comfortable saying, work on a list, put together a list of things and some suggestions, recommendations, and then bring them to us.
I think one of the things that the Planning Commission needs to hear is we're not a body to just appoint you and we don't care what happens, because we're the legislators and we get to make the last decision, right? I've never believed that. I got to serve where you're serving right now. And those changes that Ryan mentioned, we actually made in the very first part of the years 2000, because I actually served. And so I actually suggested that we let the Planning Commission have more, I won't say authority, but make more decisions and be a more active body. And I think that's a very positive thing. Can you imagine doing all of the things today that we have the Planning Commission do? Because we were doing most of them.
Yeah, no.
Back then, we were doing most of them. It doesn't make any sense.
This is
So I,
especially
I,
as we keep growing.
I am definitely all in favor of asking our commission to say, we think we need to expand the guardrail, or we need to, you know, we need to increase this kind of change. And I'm very interested in seeing what that means.
And I think, I hope you all feel or know the confidence we have. Like, there's no niche on good ideas. So I love hearing feedback from you all, and we value it. And certainly you've got perspective that I think is very important to the council. So I think it's a great idea.
Okay. So
I think we have our marching orders on those two of the four issues you sent out.
I'm gonna say that I'll ask for a motion to table our training item for in the future.
We're counting this as all of the training. We've gone through administrative, legislative authority. We've gone through conditional uses.
Good. We don't have to break that into a separate agenda item.
I told you how much I like it.
We've got a few more.
I heard you loud and clear.
We really appreciate you, Ryan.
You told me about 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. Mayor, I listened to their last meeting. One of the questions that come up was about short-term rentals.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And I wondered if we might take just a few minutes. I know
every
we
have a president of the state as president of the league brought up short-term rentals. Literally. Every single community I met with around the whole state brought up short-term rentals. It was all different, but they all brought it up.
What's the difference between a short-term rental and an
ADU? It's for...
Are we talking Airbnb?
ADU, because you're from a Well, yes, kind of Airbnb.
It's a good question. I'm going to let Ryan delve into that because it depends on how you want to answer the question.
Yeah. So I'm going to hit highlights, obviously, in the next 7 minutes, 6 minutes, which is like 2 hours, right?
How'd you figure it out?
We can't go through everything. One of them is...
When you started talking.
Yeah. Get a lot more Ryan. One of them, if it's turned landscape, sorry, you got the small print one. Charity Brin's in my office. I asked her to get me everything on short-term rentals she could, and she made this up. I thought it was going to be like a few bullet points, but this is excellent in giving us a scope. So there's in an overview, the main thing I would stress is as you look at short-term rentals, the number one thing is they're not allowed in owner-occupied situations in South Jordan right now. In other words, if there's an ADU, whether it's internal or external, we don't allow you to short-term rental that. But we don't regulate at all short-term rentals in just a house for rent. We have no regulations for those. So our one regulation is not in ADU settings. The reason we haven't regulated them is 5-6 years ago when they started to become more popular, we looked at them, we pulled, there's called a report called AirDNA. We pulled that report, and we had like three in the city. They were 60% occupied, hardly ever. And the only issue we had was that in one specific neighborhood for Thanksgiving, someone rented a big house, had a bajillion people over, and all the other big houses on the street, same street, had a bajillion people over, and there was a fight about who got to park, that people who lived there should get their guests to park closer than people who are just short-term rentaling it. Because no matter how big the lot is, there's not enough parking lot when you invite. And a member of my wife's family lives on that street, and literally in their house, we had 55 to 60 people there just for one meal. And if you think about all the cars coming, you can see the parking problems. It was on the same street as this rental. And so you're going to have issues like that, but those are fairly infrequent. It was what we were seeing 5-6 years ago. In more recent times, we are seeing the La Bus pull up to a house and 30, 40 young athletes go in that are in some softball or baseball or some tournament around here, and they've rented the house and they're backing full of people. Or we're seeing some public safety problems with some of the short-term rentals. I don't want to overstate that, but Chief could talk to that.
It's fair that we've had assaults and we've had a couple shootings and
And louder parties and stuff. One of the things about renting your property is that's part of the bundle of sticks, right? That constitutionally, well, I think we have. And I don't know where the limits are. You'll see on here in the 11th Circuit, they've said you can ban them entirely. We live in the 10th Circuit. And so that doesn't apply to us necessarily. And there's nothing from the Supreme Court. And when you get into housing and stuff, there's some mind paths to walk here. One thing we could do, regulation-wise, there's lots we can do. Some cities zone it, and so only in this zone can you do and stuff. Another thing like North Salt Lake does and stuff is they flip the script that we have now. Right now, we are banning them on some property, right, owner-occupied. Mm-hmm. But we flip it and say you can only do short-term where the owner lives. That may reduce some of the public safety issues.
Yeah.
Because you may not want to shoot somebody when the owner's in the same house or in the house next door on the same property. So from that standpoint, there's regulations like that. There's also regulations involving listing and stuff. The hardest part is how we enforce it.
Yep.
So about that same 5 or 6 years ago, a representative who covered Harriman and South Jordan, Representative Notwell, passed a state law that says, in enforcing these, we can pass just about any regulation we want, but in enforcing it, we can't use the listing as evidence that they're doing it. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
It's,
people don't believe
pretty clever way to totally take apart any system. And so we can't go on in what cities were doing. They were going on and they were pulling the listing. They were booking the actual rental. And when the confirmation came back, now we have a transaction. And, you know, that's great evidence. Your place, like,
is it entrapment?
Once we get it, well, it can't be entrapment when you put it on the internet and I go find you, right? And somebody said, no, you can't do that. And so we can't use that. Now, it's really hard to get the person renting there to come back from their home and wherever a year later to be our evidence in court. They don't want to show up, and they're not going to show up because they like the place. Ostensibly, I guess if they really hated it, we could get them to testify for us. And it's hard to get the neighbors in to testify, and the neighbors, it's usually hearsay. Evidentiary-wise, it's very difficult to enforce. So I'll tell you up front, we will do our best to figure out how to enforce it. I know St. George has been struggling with this for years. Moab, Springdale, all of these resort communities have. It's starting to hit us more. Our problems are a drop in the bucket compared to what they face. But still, they're starting to change some of the dynamics of our neighborhoods. I know one of our council members has a friend that moved out because of this. And so we want to address him. In the no time we have left, look over that. And if you have some thoughts, and I would suggest council, planning commission, give us thoughts on what you think might work regulation-wise. If you hear of others, if you want to call and talk to me, to Greg, to Charity, if you want to schedule time in to talk about them. The hard part is going to be enforcement, not enacting regulations. We can require business licensing. Some communities do that. We can require a lot. It's going to be the enforcing. We found a website yesterday, how to get around short-term rental regulations and stuff. And they're all out there because people make a lot of money for them. I don't think the strongly worded letter is going to solve the problem.
The history on it, if you don't mind me saying, Salt Lake City bans them, and they were enforcing it by going after the people that were listing their homes on these sites, on Airbnb and so forth, within their city. And that's how they were enforcing it. I personally think that the ban from using that evidence is probably unconstitutional. And I think that, in other words, we're going to limit you from getting to the truth, is what it is. And I would love to take that to the Supreme Court.
Because it's a state on the books here now for 6 years in Utah.
Nobody's challenged it.
I think the state courts have, like, if no one's appealed it up. Yeah. But I know a few people have tried to use that evidence, and the judges have thrown it out.
Yeah. So anyway, sorry.
And I checked with Salt Lake. They do allow them in districts where other lodging uses are permitted. So they're not allowed in primary residential. So they have kind of a split there.
Yeah.
We had a bit.
In my experience, just talking with so many other communities, they're all handling it different. There is a lot of latitude in what you can do, but you can't really enforce much. And so, and I know that's where some frustration comes in. There's one street specifically that I'm thinking of that where the LaBus pulls up with a whole team at the end of the street now, that those residents are losing it over. They're frustrated, and I don't blame them Of course they are, but they don't believe us that there's not much we can do. Oh, there's a lot we can do, but we can't enforce it, right? And they're having a hard time believing that. So this is a conversation that I'd like us to have in more depth and see what we can come up with, just with the understanding that there's only so much we can do to enforce it, you know?
Unless we give Greg carte blanche to take the case.
I was going to say, I can put them on the misery factor, you know.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
We only have, what do we have left? I think we just lost Mr. Harris. Okay. We only have a couple of minutes left. We need to prepare to wrap up, but anybody have final thoughts, final questions at this point for this time? I'd really like us to get together and do this again.
I would like to talk ADUs another time. We've had discussions on what we're going to allow futuristic and what we're allowing right now. And it came to my attention just in the last couple of weeks. When we passed our ordinance in November, I believe it was.
It was about this time last year.
Okay.
Late May or June. Yeah.
Anyway, the PC zone that we're all very familiar with, we've just been talking about, is not...
Well, it's exempted from
yeah.
that.
And so there are people that have everything that everybody else in the city of South Jordan has, but yet they're not allowed to have an ADU. I'd like us to see if we can bridge that gap. Because in Daybreak, if you have a 6,000 square foot lot, 4-car garage, and a fully permitted basement apartment, you're not being allowed to have that as an ADU. And that's not conducive to what we've allowed in the rest of the city. So I don't know, how do we bridge that gap, but I think it's a problem. And I've spent a lot of time talking to Stephen about it and Dustin about it. So I'd really like to have a follow-up conversation about how we feel like we can get that to be more acceptable. Daybreak's kind of turning a blind eye to it. And...
One thing I wanted to clarify, though, we have treated Daybreak uniquely in that the state statute says primarily residential zones, and we're trying to be very protective. I agree, we need to address the issue within Daybreak.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't ever want to cross the line and say the state statute should apply, because I don't think Daybreak is primarily residential. They have equal amounts of office and industrial. We have large amounts allotted to them, and as they use more of that. So I think we need to change our ordinance as to it, but I don't ever want to give the impression that the state statute starts to apply, because I've already had developers say, no, it's primarily residential. And it simply isn't. We're seeing it with the ballpark and the downtown. We're going to have huge amounts of other stuff. So I totally agree. We do that, but let's not try to rope in the state statute.
Okay.
We'll just create our own rules for it.
I would like to request that's on the next upcoming work session as soon as possible, because it's a huge disparity that any family in Daybreak can't have an ADU when everybody else in the city can.
And we're just to clarify, we're talking internal ADUs.
Mm-hmm.
ADUs that are above a garage, that's a different story, but internal
ADUs. Yeah, because there's a lot of those.
Not a lot.
They're
and the ones that have them above the garage.
I know a couple. There's not that many.
Those have been permitted since the
beginning.
Those
were permitted,
Daybreak.
The short answer is our city doesn't really regulate those. It's the thing, but let's talk through what we can.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Isn't that HOA has a lot more say over that?
But they're not.
Than we do.
We'll figure it out. We'll talk. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, happy to bring back. It probably is best to go summarize what's been done in Daybreak, what's allowed in Daybreak, what's allowed in the rest of the city. We can review the ordinance.
The HOA regulates and what we have authority over or whatever. Yeah, let's do.
And then leave it to you to tell us what direction we need to take it.
Yeah, I can tell you, I know it'll probably be a month and a half before that can come back to a work session. They are all booked. Yeah.
Okay, sooner the better.
But 2 months,
more.
They're very booked.
We have some placeholders open.
I'll make some.
Okay.
Yeah, we have some that are just placeholders, and if one of those falls through, then we'll slip it in.
Thank you.
We'll be ready to go, and if something falls off of one or cancels on you.
Okay, we do have to wrap it up, but I'd like us to be able to keep talking about these things, right? And keep working on some of these challenges that come along with being one of the fastest growing cities in the whole country, right? These things aren't going to go away easy, and it's going to take all of us. And And there's never such thing as being able to inform and educate folks enough, because things change, they're fluid, and we get new people all the time who move in, right? And so, and we can't control what also people are told or what they hear or what they, you know, we can't. And so it's just a constant process that we appreciate all the collaboration and the chance to do this. So if you guys are willing to come back another time, we'd love to have you come back.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Our time is up, and so I am going to ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I'll second that.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.